Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. The White House calls homeland security the most significant transformation of the U.S. government in over half a century, one that will streamline the current patchwork of government activities into a single department whose primary mission is to protect our homeland. A vote to approve homeland security could take place in the Senate today. Aside from the usual debate over the usual pork, including a Homeland Security Research Center that must be built at Texas A&M to make this nation safer, the reviews of the actual legislation are mixed. Some say it's an impossible task, that there's no way all the different agencies will ever share information and work together in a way that'll make it tougher on the terrorists. Others aren't so pessimistic, saying the massive reorganization is an important first step in rethinking security. Connection listeners, does the idea of a Department of Homeland Security give you any comfort? How will the reorganization change the way the government thinks and acts in the face of vague threats, orange alerts, and promises of spectacular terrorist attacks yet to come? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined today from a studio in Washington by Phil Anderson. He's a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. His specialty is homeland security issues. And I'm joined from the Vermont-Canada border by John Wilda. He's a customs inspector at the Highgate Springs Port of Entry on I-89 and the president of his union, the National Treasury Employees, Chapter 142. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
John, let me start with you. All this talk in Washington about the legislation perhaps finally being passed by the Senate, is it going to make a real difference where you work on the border?
Well, that's subject to speculation. At this point, I would say, yes, I think it will make a difference. I see lots of things in this bill that I wish were not there.
Oh, you're saying a difference perhaps not for the better?
Not for the better. I see other things that would probably work a lot more effectively and efficiently than the present bill that's sitting in the Senate.
Okay, just tick off a couple for me if you can, John. What's wrong with the bill as you see it?
Well, there's a couple of things wrong with the bill. Aside from the fact that the bill that is sitting in the Senate now is different from the one that was sitting in the House, there's a lot of pork barrel projects in the bill. There are also some protections for employees that have been taken out of the bill. And I think the protections for the employees are important not only for the employees but for the public as well.
Give me an example of what you mean.
Well, an example I think would be that in this bill, it basically gives the director the freedom to transfer employees at will to different locations throughout the country. And living on the Quebec-Vermont border, we have a lot of French-speaking people up here. And I think language is certainly one of the issues. And there are many others also. One of the advantages to working in one place for an extended period of time is you learn where some of the places are that people should not be visiting. If they do visit there, a green light goes off that let's take a look, or a red light goes off that we should be taking a look at these people.
John, I also want to focus in on the one feature of this that is often referred to by the politicians, and that is the sharing of information from among all these agencies that are supposed to be underneath the umbrella of Homeland Security. For example, late last week or weekend, we had that warning of another potential terrorist attack, right?
Yes, we did. And the way we found out about it here at Customs in Highgate is from the news.
What, off television or radio?
Off television or radio.
And so did you find out any more about it after that? Did you get any alerts, anything to watch for?
Not particularly. And I think one of the advantages of the bill would be sharing of information. But I also feel that it doesn't take a Homeland Security bill in order to perform that function. I think there's a much easier way to do it. And one of the things would be a advanced computer system. And perhaps the President of the United States talking to the commissioner of the various agencies and encouraging them to share information a lot better than they do now.
Let's hear from Phil Anderson. Phil, it strikes me as actually close to amazing that these people who are supposed to be watching the borders and guarding the country are getting information on terrorist alerts off, you know, CNN.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. I spent most of my life in uniform as a Marine officer and retired here several years ago. And I can remember well getting information, particularly during the war in the desert here 11 years ago, right off of CNN. It was the best source of information. That's not to say that we don't have to find a way to ensure clearer lines of communication within the government and at all levels of government, federal, state, and local. But, you know, it's a fact of life that the news media, in many cases, is going to be more responsive than the bureaucracy.
Well, Phil, you've taken a look at this legislation. Is the Homeland Security bill the type of legislation that will get the information to the border inspectors faster, more efficiently?
Well, what I think it will do is, over the long term, it will ensure clearer lines of communications, and I emphasize clearer, not clear. I think that when you're talking about just the sheer number of agencies and number of people and overall responsibility that that this new agency is going, new department is going to have to absorb, there's no way in the near term to have absolute clear lines of communication. It's just not going to happen. But I mean, I think a worthy goal is clearer lines of communication, clearer lines of authority, clearer lines of responsibility and accountability. And I think if we get that, you know, we the American people will be somewhat safer in the near term. It's going to take years potentially for us to realize any significant benefit from this reorganization, in my view. And that's not an indictment on government. If you look back at the Defense Reorganization Act of 1947 that established the Department of Defense, it took, you know, some people would argue 10 years for the Department of Defense to be, you know, a coherent whole, a functioning entity that you know, was acting as it was designed to act.
And is the reorganization that we're looking at under Homeland Security really such a vast reorganization?
I believe it is, yes. I think that this is clearly the most complex problem the nation has ever had to face, both in terms of the enemy, but also in terms of the organization itself. I mean, this reorganization involves 22 agencies of government. There are clearly at least 46 agencies of government that have some responsibility in the Homeland Security arena. So I think it absolutely represents a massive reorganization and redirection of government assets.
Let's go back to John Wilda on the border. John, since 2001, since September 11th, what's changed at your workplace?
Well, several things have changed. We used to work some of the small border crossings alone on a shift. There'd be just one employee there, one inspector. And now, since 9-1-1, we try to staff with two inspectors, although at some point one of those persons was not an inspector. It was a National Guardsman. And now there are other things being floated around to provide a second person there. But the one-person stations have become two-person stations. The large crossing at Highgate, we look in more vehicles and more trunks than we used to.
This should be good news, right?
Yes, we examine more vehicles. Now, that does create more of a wait at the border. So there's a benefit, and there's some things that are not so good. But it seems like most people have not minded the wait as much since they know what the reason is.
The one thing that the two of you can help me understand here is, in terms of actually making Homeland Security work, does the government need to operate at a bunch of different levels at the same time, reorganizing the head offices of all these agencies in Washington at the same time as it's talking to customs inspectors on borders like the Quebec-Vermont border? John, do you want to start on that?
Well, I think, first of all, when you're in the middle of a high alert, I don't think that's the proper time to reorganize anything. I think what you need to do is look at what you have and what's the best, quickest way to improve it. And I think to participate in one of the largest reorganizations ever in the U.S. government during the middle of a high alert is making a very big mistake. Because now, instead of concerning yourself with 10 or 20,000 inspectors, whether they're immigration or customs, you're now affecting 170,000 employees. And I think that's a massive undertaking at the wrong time.
Phil, what do you think?
Yeah, that's certainly, you know, that's absolutely a good argument. But I think the fact remains that we are going to remain in a heightened state of alert into the foreseeable future. This is not a problem that's going to go away anytime soon. So reorganization, whenever it comes, is going to be problematic. And John pointed to, you know, 170,000 employees, and certainly the biggest obstacle that has to be faced in this reorganization relates to organizational cultures and different ways of doing business. And, you know, I refer back to an earlier comment I made about how long this is likely to take. And I think the administration's position on this is that you've got to start someplace. There has to be a logical starting point, and there seems to be agreement across broad agreement across both the legislative and executive branches that this is in the best interest of the American people. I think what's important at this point is that we move forward appropriately and as quickly as possible to bring this thing together, and I think that it's really going to be a function of leadership. I think more than any time in any other time in recent history, success in this environment is going to depend on some key leaders associated with this department, the secretary and his principal deputies, to make this work. Because, quite frankly, the process and the processes and procedures are going to take some time to develop, and the obstacles associated with organizational cultures are not going to be resolved quickly. So it's going to be the strength of leadership that prevails and ensures success in this environment.
John Wilder, what about the argument that it's really not fair to criticize Homeland Security at this point because the bill hasn't been passed, the office hasn't been set up, and we're not really too sure what's going to happen when all that's in place?
Well, that's a very good point. However, I'd like to point out that Customs itself did go through a reorganization in the mid-90s, and the union did play a major role in that. We did have input on how things could be done better, and we had a lot of input on a lot of issues. And I think that eased the transition from one way of doing things to another way of doing things. And it seemed to work very well in a lot of special operations that we have had in relation to interception of drugs, in relation to the Summit of the Americas and things like that. And I think at this point, it seems like the employees of this agency should have more input than even the Senate has at this point, because we know, a lot of us know what we're doing and how better to do things. And I think to exclude the employees from input, even in the bill, and to have a 30-page bill go into the House and a 484-page bill come out of it, things have changed significantly. And to have our Senate vote on something like that,
let me just stop you there if I can, John, because we have to take a short break. Our number, Connection listeners, is 1-800-423-8255. At the very moment when the Senate is debating the details of Homeland Security, we're talking about what difference it makes on the ground to the workers and to you. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University.
My name's Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio this hour, talking about Homeland Security on the day that the Senate is debating and may well vote on the bill. We're talking with people who understand the legislation and can tell us a little bit about how Homeland Security works on the ground. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. With me on the program, John Wilda. He's a customs inspector at the Highgate Springs, Vermont border crossing. That's with Quebec on I-89. And Phil Anderson's with us. He's a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington. He's worked with White House staff on Homeland Security. It's his area of specialty. And we're going to bring Sheriff Robert Fracano into the conversation now. He is sheriff in Wayne Wayne County, Detroit, has been doing that job for the past 20 years. Sheriff Fecano, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on.
Tell me, in your view, what's changed in the last year and what will change once this bill is in place?
Well, we're anticipating that there's going to be greater coordination between all the federal agencies, and in particular, probably what's going to be critical is the sharing of information and to make sure that the FBI, as well as Border Patrol and others that have the responsibility to make sure they have information available to them, that they're able to, I'm presuming, get into their own databases and to be able to coordinate and work together better. I'm hoping eventually, too, that it would mean more money for local law enforcement. I'm not sure what the funding structure of it would be, per se, and I know that's probably being debated right now. But we'd love to see more money come down because, quite frankly, the eyes and ears many times are local police that are on the ground. For example, after 9/11, our border here, one of the most open borders between Detroit and Windsor, which the Canadian city, the threshold obviously went dramatically up. There were waits of up to 12 hours for trucks to go through, sometimes 4 hours for passenger cars. We deputized something like 75 police departments that came in to help the border and immigration officials in that particular instance. It's starting to ease up now because as more people get hired into the federal positions and things like that, there's more availability of personnel. But we're hoping that that eventually there would be more money for local law enforcement, too, because it's not going to go away, and a lot of the responsibility is still going to be with us as well.
Sheriff, tell me whether or not this idea of sharing information, something that you really think is going to happen. Is the FBI going to give you access to its database, that sort of thing?
I don't think you'll see the FBI give it, perhaps, pro forma right to the local law enforcement agency. I am initially believing that the federal agencies themselves will have a greater sharing of information. At least that's the perception I have of what this bill is going to do.
And sharing of information, is that key to you?
I think, yeah, it's very critical. I mean, information is the lifeblood of many times of how you're going to react and what's going to happen. And the more information you have, and you have not only information coming in, but people that can analyze it, you can then see patterns and you can see situations that you might be able to project what's going to happen. We see it right now where we work, for example, on task forces with narcotics. When you have analysts of all the arrests and information, like in the Detroit metropolitan area, you can start to pick up trends of what's happening with the drug trade. And I'm presuming on the federal level with Homeland Defense that you'd be able to start doing the same things.
I was talking with John Wilde a couple of minutes ago, Sheriff. He's on the Quebec border, Quebec-Vermont border, and he was saying that, you know, when these terrorist alerts come through, he's seeing news of it on television. Is that where you're getting information now?
Unfortunately, many times, sometimes you do see it. I know there's been an attempt to vastly improve it, and some of it comes through some of the emails and through other networks, but... it's better than it was prior to 9/11. I can say that the federal government has made a more serious attempt to try to do some notification, but it's my understanding, at least nationally, that it's not uniform and there's difficulties with it still, because CNN seems to get it quicker than anybody else.
So, Robert, John, is do you think you guys will be able to talk to each other any more easily once the bill's through?
Well, I think we'll be able to. We do that now with the local departments, though. We do have a pretty good sharing of information with some of the state police and some of the local police agencies in the area. I think the big problem pre-911 is that there was no one in charge of terrorist activities. But I think since then, basically placing that responsibility on the shoulders of the FBI at least placed it in one location, which is very, very good. However, on the Homeland Security, I don't believe the FBI is included in that. I don't believe they're one of the 22 agencies.
Phil Anderson?
No, they're not. The FBI is not included in this reorganization.
Is that a flaw, that information that they hold is not necessarily going to be part of the sharing?
No, but not necessarily, because there are actually 14 agencies that are involved in intelligence gathering And what the new department really needs and what I believe it will get is the ability to analyze that information that comes from multiple sources. But on the information sharing issue in general, I mean, it's very problematic just at the federal level to ensure adequate information sharing. If you take that a step further and you know, look at the challenges associated with sharing information across all aspects of government, federal, state, and local, and then take it one step further, all aspects of government sharing information with the private sector. The private sector owns, operates, and controls at least 85% of our critical infrastructure. This is an enormous problem. We're talking about millions of data points that have to be sorted and you know, directed appropriately. This is not something that's going to be resolved, you know, necessarily right away by a new department. It's certainly got to be among the top, you know, 3 to 5 priorities, you know, for the new secretary to address. But it's going to take some time to solve this problem.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Mark's joining us. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
Thanks for calling.
I'm kind of in the middle of this whole mess. I just started work as a Transportation Security Administration airport screening supervisor. And it's been pretty chaotic the way things have been put together, and I'm a little concerned about this bill that's going through right now because it bears very little resemblance to what was originally proposed, and I'm afraid that we're going to get settled down in our jobs. I mean, we are right now the foot soldiers in the war on terrorism in the airports throughout the country, and things are in a constant state of flux. Part of the problem is that so much of what has been done was privatized. The testing and hiring and all the training has been privatized, and there's been a constant flow of misinformation or no information at all traveling between the government agency and these privatized companies. And
Mark, it's Dick here. Why don't you think that some of this will be fixed once the bill's in place and there's a secretary and there's a department?
Well, what's going to happen is that we're starting to settle down now. We can see the light at the end of the tunnel because we're finishing up our on-the-job training and we're starting to work, and things are starting to get coordinated because all the privatization is now behind us, and the chaos is starting to settle down. But if this new bill is passed, that means a total reorganization again, and we're going to have that same problem of misinformation, disinformation, no information, and new bosses coming in, and there's going to be that whole pecking order game that gets played from agency to agency, and those of us down here on the ground where the work gets done are going to suffer because somebody upstairs is going to be playing games with our national security.
John Wilder, this is something that you were talking about a couple of minutes ago. John?
What was that again?
I said you were making reference to change in the middle of change as well, also causing problems for you folks on the border.
Yes, and I think that's a real problem, not just for the employees, but for the public, because it's the public that pays the price in the interim. And even though the long term, I agree we need some type of a change, especially as far as information sharing is concerned, I think a less disruptive change would be more beneficial to the public and to the individuals involved.
Robert Ficano, do you worry about what's ahead?
Sure you do, but I mean, it's like anything else. Whenever you're going through such a dramatic change, like when you're combining these departments and everything goes on, it's like turning a battleship around. You can't do it on a dime. You know that big long arc and direction that you want to go in, and we know there's anxiety now because of the potential threat of the terrorism, but like anything else, you're going to have faith that the people at the top are going to be able to merge this and do the job. Because if you don't, then, you know, it's just going to create chaos. Will there be mistakes? Will there be hiccups? I'm sure there will be. But it's the tone that is set, and whether the tone is everybody's going to cooperate, everybody's going to share information, we're going to go in the same direction of Homeland Security. I think at that point, that will straighten things out.
Robert, I want to thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Sheriff Robert Ficano is with the Wayne County in Detroit and has done that job for 20 years, running the office there. Phil Anderson, you have brought us back a number of times to the same point that that our callers and our other guests are talking about, that we're heading into kind of a chaotic period. Are you confident that all the different agencies are going to make it through that and that the country will be safer as a result?
I'm an optimist. I absolutely believe that we will make it through this. Let me say that there's any number of options that, that could have been employed to organize the government effectively for Homeland Security. And some of them don't even involve a new department. There could have been a national coordinator, but this is what this is the consensus position. This is what the president and the Congress have agreed on, and I think it's incumbent upon all of us to try to make it work. I agree with Sheriff Ficano on the leadership issue. It's going to be a very important part of all of this. But I would have just a few minutes ago liked to have asked your listener, the new employee of TSA.
Right.
How he feels about airline passenger security today. I don't believe that TSA is going to be in any significant way affected by this reorganization. I think that under the leadership of Admiral Jim Loy, TSA is moving forward very quickly. And certainly, when you look at the timeline that they've had to operate on to take control of airport security throughout the country, I mean, it's nothing short of a miracle that they've been able to do what they've been able to do, up to this point. I personally don't believe that that passenger airlines are threatened at this point in any significant way. I think it's highly unlikely that terrorists will commandeer passenger airliners anytime again soon, if ever. Not necessarily because of what TSA has done, but certainly that contributes in large measure to the overall success there. But simple things like reinforced cockpit doors and a situationally aware flying public, all of those things come together to make airline passenger travel a lot safer.
Okay, Phil, let me move
there are
along.
Certainly other aspects of aviation that we need to be focusing on that I hope the new department will address, things related to air cargo and air charter and general aviation assets that remain far less secure than passenger airlines.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Mark, thanks for that call. To Chapel Hill, North Carolina, Jimmy's joining us. Hello, Jimmy.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
A couple of things. I feel like that there are far more productive ways to spend our resources to make this a peaceful world than reorganizing huge parts of the government. And what with the deals with Texas A&M and the pharmaceutical companies inserted into the bill, it's hard for me to believe that that's not a case of, giving favors to people. And so it's hard for me to buy that the administration really has my self-interest.
But that has happened in every administration with virtually every omnibus bill that has come before the House and the Senate. There's always this stuff.
I shouldn't talk about it now?
No. I'm just saying that it's not unique to this, is it?
No, but it certainly continues to erode my trust in the administration.
Okay, so let me bring you back to where you began, why it is you believe that the sort of reorganization we're talking about is not the way that the government should be going now.
Well, I'm fine with the idea of reorganizing the government and making it work more efficiently and sharing information. All those are great ideas.
Right.
But on the other end of it, I'm not seeing any work done to ensure my peace here in the United States. I a lot of what the government is doing is sensationalist and provocative, and I certainly don't feel like that's in the best interests of Homeland Security. I'd like to see some work done on that end. Why aren't we spending energy on that, our resources? Like I said,
I mean, if John Wilda says that customs inspectors are spending more time looking in more cars, there are more staff on the borders. That, I mean, it's just a very small example, Jimmy, but isn't that part of what we're talking about here?
Well, I guess it is, but what we're not doing is setting an example for the world on how to be a peaceful people. You know, we're supposed to be...
Hello. Oh, we've lost Jimmy. Sorry about that. John, just a sense from you about the point that he's making. They're going about it in the wrong way.
Well, I kind of agree with that. I think the fact that a Homeland Security bill had been proposed quite some time ago, what is in the Senate now doesn't even resemble what was there before. And I think there are a lot of pork barrel projects in there. But on another issue, as far as the borders are concerned, I think the question is, are they more secure now than they were pre-9-1-1? They are, but we have a lot of work to do. There are thousands of containers that come into the United States with no inspection at all, and could something be coming in some of those? And I think there's a better way to do things. And I'm not sure Homeland Security is going to resolve that problem.
Phil Anderson, you're saying that based on what you know about it, it is or will.
Well, I think it offers the potential to improve the situation. Again, I think we become a little safer every day. I think as a result of this new department, we'll be a little safer. We're a long ways from being safe. But with regard to John's comment about containers, they have a very visionary customs commissioner in Robert Bonner, who has put into motion a program that I'm sure John is very familiar with, CTPAT, and the Container Security Initiative, CSI, to begin to address the problems associated with container traffic. It's going
Phil,
to
let me just stop
long,
you there. We're going sure. to a break. We'll be back in just a few seconds to talk more about Homeland Security being debated as we speak in the Senate. Is it offering what you're looking for? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
From Boston University, this is...
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name is Dick Gordon. This hour, we're talking about Homeland Security. With me on the program, Phil Anderson. He's a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington and focuses specifically on Homeland Security. John Wild is with us. He's a customs inspector at the Highgate Springs, Vermont-Quebec border crossing, I-89. Our number's 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. John, one of the numbers that I was looking at was that in the last year of combating terrorism, the federal government spent some $10 billion, but only about $330 million of that on training and equipment for first responders, for people on the ground. Is that an issue with you and your people that so far... The money that's supposed to go to help precisely the people who we depend on, the border guards and the police and the firefighters and all those, those people aren't seeing the results of the sort of change we're talking about.
Well, I find that very, very true. And I think that's one of the things that bothers me about the Homeland Security priority is the fact that the budgets for the agencies are sitting idle and we're operating under continuing resolutions instead. And I think a good example of that is the fact that we have a $1 million piece of equipment sitting in our parking lot idle because we don't have the resources to operate it.
What is it?
Well, that's a portable vacuum machine that's used to X-ray trucks and overseas containers. And we did get this piece of equipment, which is very expensive, extremely valuable. And the fact that it's sitting idle because we don't have the resources because Congress hasn't passed a budget for the Customs Service yet is a crying shame.
And Phil Anderson, this is going to be an ongoing problem because it's one thing to set up the department. It's another thing to say, look, it's going to cost this amount of money rather than just shuffling existing dollars.
Yeah, and the point is not, I mean, this problem with continuing resolutions happens every year, and the Congress truly does need to get its act together in that regard. If you look at customs specifically, I was talking about the Customs Trade Pact Against Terrorism and the Container Security Initiative. Customs entered and has reached agreements with at least 9 countries to inspect shipping containers, and they can't deploy the agents they need, that I think they're scheduled to be there in January or February to get the job done because the funds haven't been freed up. And that's not necessarily a problem with the administration, but it's more directed at, on Congress's efforts in this regard.
But in a broader sense, Phil, does the money come through when the bill is passed?
We got to get past the continuing resolution problem. But, I mean, the bottom line here is that Homeland Security represents a very expensive proposition. The $37.7 billion, $38 billion budget for fiscal year 03 that is still under a continuing resolution is just a drop in the bucket, in my view. I think we're talking about tens of billions of dollars more in required spending to address this problem. You talk about first responders. What's it going to take, to get our first response capability across the nation up to where it needs to be with standard procedures and standard communications equipment?
Yeah, I mean, simple stuff like radios.
It's going to cost a lot more than has been programmed. Excuse me?
Simple things like radios that talk to each
right.
other.
Right. That's exactly right. I mean, and what's been allocated for the next fiscal year in that regard is a very small amount. It doesn't even come close to addressing the problem fully. This is something that's going to cost us tens of billions of dollars more in the years ahead if we're going to do it right.
Our number is 1-800-423-TALK, and we're going to Cambridge, Massachusetts. Anne is joining us. Hello, Anne.
Hello.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I'm surprised that if you're talking about tens of billions of dollars of doing it right, that you can't really build a big enough gated community for the McMansion mentality. I agree with your earlier caller that this bill is absolutely wrong-headed. You can't put up a big enough gate. You have to start solving part of the reason people want to fly airplanes into our buildings. And you can't just, if you get a bunch of guys from the suburbs from that mentality, this is what they're going to come up with.
All right,
solution.
Fair enough, Anne, but we've had this part of the conversation, and yes,
well,
hang on a second here. It might be very valuable to figure out a way to get people to not want to attack the United States, but in the time being, something's got to be done, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know. Is this a part of Star Wars? This fantasy that you can find a way to make this back into an island with two big oceans on either side of it? I don't think it's going to work.
Phil Anderson.
Yes, it's really a good question. What we're talking about here is, her question relates to the larger war on terrorism. What we've been talking about is the defense. Just relying on my old military experience, we always used to say, you only defend long enough to continue the attack. The thing that's going to ensure our survival as a nation long term is the offense, and that relates to getting at, at least at some aspects of it, the root causes of terrorism, and finding terrorists where they live, and removing them. But beyond that, and eliminating the root causes of terrorism. But at the same time, we've got to continue to ensure that the American people are safe, and that's ultimately going to cost a lot of money.
Is it a mindset thing, Anne, in your view, that as long as the government is concentrating on how high the wall can be built, then it won't be thinking about what Phil's talking about?
Well, if we could get people out of those 8-mile-a-gallon SUVs, we wouldn't have to spend so much of our time making Iran safe and Iraq safe for Halliburton executives.
Anne, thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
1-800-423-8255. And to Durham, North Carolina, Scott's with us. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine. Thanks for calling.
Good. My concern with the whole debate that's taking place in the Senate right now is the realization that the legislative process has been corrupted by add-ons at the 11th hour. I'm very, very, very discouraged by this, and it cheapens the whole attempt to make our country safer. Specifically, three bills, one in the House, one in the Senate, with respect to vaccine safety and the scientific issues that are still out pertaining
right.
to thimerosal. This provision simply protects an industry and specifically one company. Second, companies that decide to expatriate and locate to another country to avoid taxes can do business under this provision, and that didn't pass either in July.
But Scott, how if you've got a piece of legislation that, as you said, is important to the nation's safety, and you've got both parties with a great long history of attaching these bits of pork to it, how do you break that cycle?
Well, if you were to take the two parties and look at whose interest they're serving in general, corporate America has been served quite well here. How you break that is by having legislative procedure, oversight in the light of day. You don't do it at the 11th hour and jam it in on a provision that has been cheapened by the process. That's one way you do it. A second way you do it is to not put onto the brink of one session at the brink of the next session provisions that weren't argued or debated. You do it by the light of day, and our legislative process, particularly in terms of our nation's security, are just too important to play special interest games.
I want to hear from John Wilda at the border crossing on this, because it's the people who do work in the police stations and in the fire stations and on the borders who are going to be the ones who either have to buy into this whole idea that homeland security is a good thing, and yes, we need to, you know, sort of put up with whatever kind of upset happens at the office and changes in bosses and procedures, or people are not going to buy into it. And John, when someone like Scott's talking about how the legislation itself is cheapened by this, is that something that concerns you, that people talk about where you work?
Yes, they do. And I'd have to say that I agree with Scott 100% on that issue. I think what the Senate and the Congress needs to do is to show its genuine concern for the security of the homeland by its actions. And I think when the House looked at the Homeland Security bill, they looked at a fairly concise bill that was good for the people. And I think what's in the Senate now is a bill that is loaded with pork barrel projects that are going to benefit only certain companies. And I don't think that's a concern for the security of our country as much as it is a pork barrel project for Texas A&M or a pork barrel project for Eli Lilly or someone else. I agree with Scott.
Phil Anderson, you're a creature of Washington. Are you rolling your eyes as you listen to this?
Well, politics is politics, and I absolutely agree that it'd be a heck of a lot better if the pork wasn't there. But the reality is it's always there.
But you've heard the level of cynicism, both from callers and first responders, about that piece of legislation, which, as I said, people kind of have to get behind it if it's going to work, don't they?
Sure, but I mean, is the pork a reason to, you know, to throw the baby out with the bathwater? I mean, I don't know.
One of our earlier callers, again, Mark, seemed to indicate that yes, in fact, you know, it just destroyed his confidence in it.
Well, I still believe it's a stretch to say that one or both parties are less interested in the safety and security of the American people and more interested in you know these things that have been attached to the bill. Again, I mean, politics is politics. We've seen this. You said it yourself. We've seen this time and time again. It's the nature of the system. I don't excuse it. I wish it weren't there. But it's the environment in which we have to operate. And certainly, we have the power to change the system every couple of years when we go to the polls.
John, what's it going to take for you to talk to your fellow inspectors at the border and say, you know, this is good, this is working, this is making this country a safer place?
I think what it's going to take is for someone in a position to listen to the concerns of the employees, because we're the ones who do the work, and but we're not just doing the work. We have concerns for the safety of our families as well, and I think this has been forgotten along the way, that, yes, we are playing a role here at the border. We see a better way to do things, but suggestions fall on deaf ears. And we do have this cynicism that gets developed when we look at a bill and follow what happens to that bill from start to finish. And the finished product that I'm looking at right now doesn't even resemble the product that they started with.
Leadership is what Phil Anderson was talking about earlier, that you in effect need that a boss who's going to come in and say, okay, set this aside. This is how we're going to do it, and this actually matters.
I think leadership is the driving force behind all this. And I'm not sure that the leaders, the way things are set up now, that this is going to be an immediate success. And I think what we need is security now. We need it 10 years from now and 20 years from now, but we also need it right now. And I think that's what we ought to be looking at, is how can we best protect the people in the United States right now and in the future. And I'm not sure this bill does it.
Phil Anderson, you were saying earlier that it's going to take a long, long time before the benefits of the bill work their way through in terms of safety this year and next. Do you have reservations?
I pretty much agree with John. I would say that I don't think there are any 100% solutions in this environment. Certainly I wish that the process were a little more pure and the pork wasn't there, and that, you know, we could overcome some of these, you know, these bureaucratic millstones that seem to, you know, make the original proposal.
Hey, Phil, you were supposed to be my optimist here.
Well, you know, I am optimistic that things are going to be a little bit better, you know, in the near term as a result of this.
Right.
But again, I would say there are no 100% solutions. There's a lot of people out there that are looking for the perfect solution to this problem, and they want it yesterday. You know, I'll take a 60 or 70% solution in the near term that I can build on. And I, you know, it's my sincere hope, and I, you know, I think the American people need to develop, the same level of optimism that we can solve this problem and that we can make this department work.
Phil, I got to stop you there. We're out of time.
Okay.
Thanks
sure.
for being with us.
My pleasure.
Phil Anderson, Senior Fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington. John Wilda, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
John's a U.S. Customs Inspector at the Canadian border crossing at Highgate Springs, Vermont. We talked earlier with Sheriff Robert Picano of Wayne County, Michigan. Connection listeners, feel free to continue the conversation. You'll find us online. We are at theconnection.org. Tara Murphy is our senior producer. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.
This is WBUR. We're